This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
Yes, you are listening to the Sheffield United Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. Well, we missed it last week. Breaking news. Spurs sacked their manager, Maurizio Pochettino, after 5 years, 6 months after reaching that European Cup final. Well, I'm delighted to say we don't want to talk about that anymore. We want to talk about Sheffield United and everything where the Blades are concerned, only because it's a personal highlight for me. I get to talk to James Shield from the Sheffield Star. James, delighted to have you back with us for the next half an hour talking everything with Sheffield are concerned. Real pleasure to get to talk to you once again, and we get to speak on the back of another brilliant Sheffield United performance, this time against Man United. 3-3. It could have been so different. What a wild game on Sunday, James.
Oh, absolutely. It was absolutely breathless. And do you know what? I think despite the fact that they'll come off the pitch, Sheffield United, There will be sort of a little bit of disappointment that they didn't win the game, having led 2-0 at one stage and obviously then fallen behind. But I think if you'd have said to them beforehand, you know, I mean, Chris Wilder was sort of very clear again that this was another game against one of these sort of the Premier League's big guns, as it were. And I understand that Manchester United aren't the team that they were. But listen, this is still Manchester United, isn't it? And I think everything that comes with a game like that, sort of the psychological pressure, the sort of the expectation of, you know, the weight of having an opposition like Manchester United in town. And I think once again, you know, Sheffield United can come off the pitch really, really encouraged and thoroughly proud of what they achieved there. And one of the great things was that the match was on television as well, and I think it was just hopefully it'll just sort of open up, as we're trying to do here, Charlie, as well, of course, a whole new audience to what's happening at Bramall Lane at the moment.
Yeah, that's exactly it, because, you know, we get to speak about it every week on Love Sport Radio, all about the Blades. Maybe people aren't picking them up. They're not getting that national media attention. People aren't saying how good of a job they're doing this year. But they are the first newly promoted team to score 3 goals against Manchester United in a Premier League game since Leicester City won 5-3 back in September 2014, 5 years ago. James, but it's such a weird one, because we can talk about this game and you go, brilliant to get a point against United at home. But when you are 2-0 up and you're cruising, let's be honest, Sheffield United were dominating, there is a sense of frustration a little bit, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. But do you know what? I think it's almost another sort of source of encouragement for Sheffield United that they can, you know, listen, at the start of the season, if you'd have written down sort of all of the problems that you thought Sheffield United might have been facing this season, I don't think, you know, sort of throwing away a 2-goal lead and then drawing the game against Manchester United would have been one of them. I think if you'd have offered that to the coaching staff in July and August, I think they would have snatched your hand off and sort of said, you know what, yeah, that is one of the challenges, that is one of the problems that we'd love to have. But I think it was, as you said, and as I sort of said earlier, there will be a you know, the final outcome will be tinged with a little bit of frustration. But I think for me, now the dust has settled on it, when you look at some of the football that they played in that game, when you look at the way they married a sort of a real physicality, but a fair physicality, with some really sort of high levels of skill and some really sort of intricate moves, I think they can be sort of thoroughly delighted with the way that they performed. And I'll tell you what, as we've spoken on a couple of occasions on this show, Charlie, about sort of some of the challenges that a newly promoted side has got to overcome, one of the big ones is self-belief. And I think that, you know, if nothing else, they will have walked off that pitch knowing that, you know, we really, really do belong at this level. Because I think, for me, one of the great things was, one of the most revealing moments of that game was, I think you find out about teams in moments of adversity. That's when you really find out what they're about. And to concede three goals in the space of 7 minutes, and three quality goals as well, I say, you know, I'll give Manchester United credit for that. Their heads will have been spinning. And I think that would have crushed an awful lot of teams, let alone a newly promoted team. I think that would have crushed an awful lot of established top-flight clubs to have thrown away a two-goal lead in the space of 7 minutes. So I think that showed a real strength of character and a real fortitude, mental fortitude from Chris Wilder and his players. And the other thing that I think it showed that was just as impressive as that was that, you know, the way they got themselves back into that game, it wasn't by sort of sticking a centre-half up front and just going long. It was they stuck to the game plan, they stuck to their beliefs, they stuck to the way that they played. So I think just in an individual level, I think the players will take so much in terms of that self-belief. But I think in terms of the way that they actually go about their work, I think in terms of sort of the tactical template that they've got, I think they'll have walked off the pitch with an awful lot of belief in that as well.
Yeah, I completely agree. We mentioned those three goals in the space of 7 minutes, and it's very unlike Sheffield United. We're talking about how many fewer goals they've conceded this season, the clean sheets across all the tiers of the English football, you know, numerous clean sheets dating back to last season. It sort of just felt very anti them, James, for that 7 minutes. And I mean that as a compliment because, you know, they don't concede goals. It's not what they do. They don't capitulate. It felt a little bit, for those 7 minutes, just a little bit maybe nervous against the big boys, you know, Man United. We know they're not the team, but it was so unlike them, wasn't it? And they just folded for that quick 7 minutes.
Yeah, they did, absolutely. And I think it was interesting because one of the things that I think you could really take away from that game was, you know, we speak an awful lot when we're talking about the defensive record that Sheffield United have got. And when we talk about the defensive record that any team, I think, in the Premier League or the EFL has got, you know, inevitably the focus looks on the fullbacks, the wingbacks, the centre-halves and the goalkeeper. And I think a lot of people, if they hadn't watched the game, will look at that and think, you know, listen, Sheffield United were without their first-choice goalkeeper. Dean Henderson, of course, was ineligible for selection because he's on loan from Manchester United. John Egan didn't play in the game, who is their anchor point of that back three. Phil Jagielka stepped in, you know, really experienced replacement, but somebody who hasn't had an awful lot of football, let alone this season, but in terms of starts over the past 2.5 seasons. And it was interesting because I don't think you could lay the blame for that at either of those two players' doors. For me, it was really interesting because you saw about, when you talk about a defence as an entire unit, and when I say that, I mean from 1 to 10, as it were, because the real turning point of that game for me, it wasn't so much anything that Manchester United did. I think it was when Lees Moussa went off the pitch because he's a centre-forward, and that probably sounds a bit daft, but he was a centre-forward who his pace scares defenders. Mm. And just through his sheer presence on the pitch, he had a great game, by the way, scoring one goal involved in the build-up to the first. And I'm sure we'll get onto it later. I think he's quite possibly set back Phil Jones' career at Old Trafford. He's possibly damaged that sort of fatally, I think. But his presence on the pitch really, really prevented Manchester United from pushing up. Because they were scared of his pace, they were scared of his power. You could see that. And when Lees went off with what I think everybody is hoping is only a tight hamstring, because we've all seen his importance to what Sheffield United do, that just gave Manchester United sort of a little bit more license to push a little bit further up the pitch. And you know, for all the problems that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's got there, they've still got some great players. You don't hang around at a club like Manchester United for very long unless you can play a little bit. And they exploited that, and credit to them. But once again, I think they came up against the Sheffield United side that, you know what, you can dress it up how you want, Charlie. I think it's just got real guts.
Yeah, and I want to talk about Moussa because it's really interesting, James. We get to speak each week on the show, and we mentioned when Henderson made that error against Liverpool, there was no arm around the shoulder from Chris Wilder. He said, look, he can't make mistakes like this. If he wants to be the keeper that he thinks, you know, representing his nation, playing in the Premier League, he's going to need to cut that out. He's going to need to do better. It's exactly what we saw from Henderson after that. You know, he didn't sulk. It didn't get him down. We saw an upturn in his performances. Moussa, he's been brilliantly this Premier League campaign. Chris Wilder, again, kept him on his feet. And this is what I want to talk about. He said, still has to work on his game, still needs to work on his conditioning. And now, once again, we're seeing the fruits of that display in typical performances like against Man United. This is brilliant man management to go, yeah, you're doing well, so much further to go.
Yeah, absolutely right. And you just see how important, don't you, sort of that psychological understanding of your players is to, I think, not just the Premier League management, but I think management at any level. And it was interesting, you're right. He was very, very sort of complimentary towards Lees when he first brought him in. But, you know, he did give him a few little kicks up the backside, if you want to put it like that, in terms of his conditioning and in terms of, you know, saying these are the levels you've got to hit if you want to play for me. But it was interesting. A couple of weeks back, I did a piece, Charlie, in the paper up here, where it was having spoken to Lees actually at the start of the season, and it was very, very clear that he thought an awful lot of Bob Bradley, who he worked with at Le Havre, and it was Bob who sort of converted Lees really from a winger into a striker, and there was clearly a real respect and sort of affection almost there from Lees towards Bob. And I know Bob, obviously, his career at Swansea, his career in England, in Wales, but didn't go as he would have liked. It certainly didn't go as Swansea would have liked. But, you know, it's still a very, very accomplished and sort of decorated coach who's doing well in LA now. And I managed to track Bob Bradley down and get him to speak about Lees. And I also spoke to his first youth team coach at Le Havre as well. And one of the things that came across loud and clear from talking to those two was that Lees is a player who really responds to somebody who he feels has got faith in him, who he feels really, really believes in him. And, you know, he's still the same player, clearly, that he was at Le Havre. He's still got all the same sort of qualities. He's not turned himself into anything different in terms of the playing model that he brings to a team. But I think the one thing that you're seeing at Bramall Lane that he perhaps didn't have, and I think Lees himself has touched on this, and I mean this with no disrespect to Eddie Howe, who, you know, has got a sort of a myriad of great attacking talent at his disposal. But I think Lees just felt sort of psychologically very, very frustrated at Bournemouth. And he clearly feels he's come to a club and he's working for a manager and a coaching staff who have got that faith in him. And you're seeing the results of that now. And it sounds daft. I think often in football in these days, we can lose sight of the fact about how much sort of some of these transfer fees actually are. £10 million doesn't sound like a lot in terms of Premier League football, but it is. It's a huge amount of money. But I tell you what, I think there'll be an awful lot of clubs now looking at Lees Moussa and thinking, I tell you what, why didn't we look at this player? Because £10 million... for a player who's got the qualities he's got, who's got that pace, who's got that power, who's got technical ability as well, I think that's beginning to look like a real snip.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I love the fact that you went and got in touch with Bob Bradley and you've done that research. James, I'm desperately trying to find that article because I just want to read about that. I love backstories like that and just the insight into the player's journey, manager's journey, because we do write off managers and players. It's funny, you know, Moussa at Bournemouth, Bob Bradley here at Swansea, and now hopefully both are flourishing. We're seeing that. Let's quickly talk about the McBurnley level of them, because from 2-0 up, you think you're cruising 3 points, then you're almost pleased to equalise in a sense that we salvaged that point, but it could have been 3 and just glad it wasn't 0 in the end. But VAR played its part. This time, VAR works in favour of Sheffield United and the goal is given, James.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was a nervous few minutes there as well.
Certainly.
I mean, Chris Wilder said afterwards, he admitted he'd gone racing down the touchline and then somebody tapped him on the shoulder and said, this has gone to VAR again. So I think he was worried, but... No, I thought Ollie was... The goal was correctly given. It was correctly allowed to stand. It wasn't handball. I can understand why Manchester United's players were were appealing it. As you saw the frames go on, you could see that Ollie had actually done really well to get his arm out of the way, because I think he realised when he controlled it, there was a danger it would have, as the ball bounced up, it would have hit his arm. But I was actually personally really, really pleased for Ollie, because I think as much as we've talked about Lys Mousset, you know, Ollie's had he's the record signing. There's a big sort of weight of expectancy on his shoulders. I think that could be a really, really key moment in his Sheffield United career as well, because, you know, unlike Lys, Ollie's not someone who's got an awful lot of Premier League experience. He's obviously signed from a club that was in the Championship when he left Swansea City. And, you know, he did score. You know, he has scored earlier in the season. So it wasn't his first Sheffield United goal, but it's his first in a while. He's not been starting many games, and, you know, he's been working his socks off for very little reward in matches. And I just think that could be a real springboard for him to kick on as well. And if Lys Mousset is suffering from a slightly more serious hamstring problem than we believe he is at the moment, I'll tell you what, if that has given Ollie that real sort of boost and that real kick of self-belief that I think he will benefit from, I'll tell you what, it couldn't have been more timely, could it? Because it wasn't just the fact he scored that I think will really help Ollie and will really pick him up and lift him up. I think it was what that goal meant. It was when that goal was scored, and the fact that it almost, you know, it secured a draw, but it almost felt like a win after what had happened earlier. So, you know, some goals are worth more than others, if you get my drift, not only to a team, but to the individual who scores them as well.
Yeah, certainly. I think any time you get to get an equaliser against Man United for your new club, still new, always a pleasure. Well, let's talk about the game on the weekend, James, when we come back. We're going to look to that game with Wolves. And I want to ask you a few more questions about the great man in charge, Chris Wilder.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
You are listening to the Sheffield United Fan Show on Love Sport Radio. It's where the Blades have their takeover. Delighted to say I'm still joined by James Shield from the Sheffield Star. Before we look, James, at that game against Wolves on the weekend, a big clash there, I want to talk at the minute in the Premier League. It always happens every year, the managerial merry-go-round. Obviously, mentioned it at the top of the show, Maurizio Pochettino losing his job. Jose Mourinho, obviously, coming in very swiftly, less than 12 hours there. Actually, the last game that Pochettino managed for Spurs was against your beloved Sheffield United. But there are names being linked. You know, Marco Silva's on the hot seat, Pellegrini at West Ham. One of the names being linked is Chris Wilder. What is the noise up at Sheffield, you know? And I know Chris is a Sheffield United fan. He wants to stay there. But he is being linked, James, with those big clubs.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you know what? I think it's inevitable, isn't it? I don't think anybody at Sheffield United is surprised by that. In fact, I know nobody at Sheffield United is surprised by that. In a daft sort of way, I think they'll probably be highly delighted, because it goes to show that they've got a manager who other clubs sort of covet. And the reason why they covet him is because he's doing such a good job. You know, Chris is clearly somebody, and I'll probably be criticised for saying this, because it almost sounds like I want him out the door, and I certainly don't. You know, I mean, I think he's someone who can manage and hopefully will manage Sheffield United for many, many years to come. But I think he's clearly someone who's capable of managing what you would call I'll use my word sort of carefully here, but a real heavyweight football club, because I think he's shown that he's pragmatic and subtle enough to be able to sort of just tweak his methods to suit the environment that he's in. But I would be very, very surprised if at this point in time Chris would be interested in speaking to anybody else. And I would be absolutely stunned if Sheffield United were interested in encouraging him to speak to anybody else. I think, you know, listen, there are going to be some very, very good jobs out there. There's going to be some very big jobs as well coming up, I think, quite shortly in football. And we all know what those positions are. But, you know, I think Chris is on to a good thing at Sheffield United. And I think the one thing that will really appeal to Chris about the job that he's in at the moment, other than the fact it's obviously his football club, but what he's got at Sheffield United is real control over all aspects of that football club. There's a phrase he uses that, you know, my fingerprints are on every single department of this club. And, you know, that goes from what goes on at the academy through to the development squad, through to the first team, and even the infrastructure, the training ground and the, sort of the scouting infrastructure and framework that they've got. I actually don't think that if he ever moved on to another football club for whatever reason, that with the way that sort of football clubs are setting themselves up now, I don't think that he would be able to enjoy that level of influence at another football club at this level. And I think that's something that's really important to the way that he manages. So, you know, all in all, yes, there will be some attractive jobs out there coming up. I'm sure Chris will get offers. But you know what? I don't think that's anything that Sheffield United should be scared of. And I think that they should just take it as a pat on the back. I think Chris should take that as a pat on the back. But you know what? I think at the end of the day, everyone will realise we're onto a good thing here. And I think you're seeing, so long as the club can continue to match sort of the progress that the coaching staff and the team are making on the pitch, so long as they can continue to provide the right level of support without being sort of financially reckless, I think Sheffield United is a club with the infrastructure and the name itself and the sort of the framework behind the scenes that it's a club that can, I'm not going to say they're going to win the Premier League in the next couple of years, but they can quite easily go on and sort of establish themselves and grow in the same way that, say, a club like Leicester City has.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Not just the rise of Sheffield United in the last few years, but Chris himself. I've been to watch games when he was manager at Oxford, and now he's wanted by the top clubs, you know, in the Premier League, just because of the incredible, absolutely incredible job he's doing for Sheffield United. The team, him, everyone deserves all the plaudits they get. It is Wolves on the weekend, though, and this is a big one. It's fifth versus sixth. Sheffield United unbeaten in six games, you know. They're going to be confident of this one, and why should shouldn't they, James? Wolves are playing well, but they have European football to contend with as well. They play Thursday to Sunday. Sheffield United could easily go and make this seven games unbeaten.
Yeah, they could do, absolutely. And I'll tell you what, this is a sign. This, of all the games that they've played this season, in a strange sort of way, this game against Wolverhampton Wanderers at Molineux is a real sign of the speed, the sheer rapid speed of the progress that Sheffield United have made, I believe. Because it was only, not last season, the season before, that I remember going to a game at Molineux towards the end of the season, in the second half of the season. It was the year Wolves got promoted. Sheffield United were just beginning to flounder a little bit, having been sort of top of the Championship in October, and then they just got found out a little bit in terms of their squad depth, and they lost a very important player, Paul Coates, at the time. That really did hit them. And Wolverhampton Wanderers just looked a class apart, and they were the best team in the Championship that season by a country mile, and deservedly went up. But to think that in the space of what isn't really sort of two seasons, if you see what I mean, Sheffield United have closed that gap and are now just a point behind and could easily have been above Wolverhampton Wanderers in the table had they managed to hold on to that two-goal lead against Manchester United. To think that they've made that level of progress and that they're almost level pegging, as it were, with Wolverhampton Wanderers in the top flight without, and this is no criticism of Wolverhampton Wanderers because you play the hand that you're dealt, without the same sort of level of financial backing, without sort of the weight of a Chinese conglomerate behind them, I think that they've made up that ground and they're going into this game as equals with Wolverhampton Wanderers, I think just goes to show, as I said earlier, the sheer speed of the progress that they've made. But you know what as well? Even just taking Sheffield United out of that mix, I think it's great to see two clubs, two very different football clubs with two very different ways of doing things, but two clubs coming up out of the Championship and going on to make a really, really damn good fist of things in the top flight. And I just think that's great to see.
It is great to see. James, very quickly then, what is your score prediction?
My score prediction for this one, I'm going to go with a Sheffield United, a narrow win, because I would have gone for a draw, Charlie, but I'm going to go for a narrow Sheffield United win because of that European game that Wolves have got this week.
Come on, the Blades, a narrow win. James, always a pleasure. I genuinely missed you last week. James, thank you so much. The Sheffield United Fan Show is where you take us over at Love Sport Radio. Catch us at the same time as you can in every fan show next week.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.